station.
From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and where, like any respectable little brother, we tell on Big Brother. I am Fongaboo, sitting in for the vacationing Chuck Ritter, and I'm here tonight with Phil, Lil, Mechno, and Sean. And tonight we'll be your hosts as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 36 of Little Brother, dated the 3rd of March, 2002. Stay tuned, Little Brother's right around the corner. Before we get started, I need to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of the WRPI staff or management, the Rensselaer Student Union, or Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at Little Brother or interact with us, you can do so by phone, area code 518-276-6248. If you prefer to write us an email, the address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That's critter@verizoneatspoop.com. And of course, you can visit our website at www.radiocritter.com. And of course, as always, snail mail. You can write to Chuck Ritter, care of WRPI, Box 31, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. So before we get to our first story, I want to quickly share two anecdotes. They both involve stupidity.
You don't say.
And at least in a roundabout way, technology. First one real quick. This week, my roommate installed voice activation software on his computer. It's a Windows XP machine, I believe.
What do they call that? Biometrics?
I think it's the Microsoft, like, plug-in jobby, where basically you can voice activate just most of your applications in some way. But it was really funny. He had it running as a trial run, and he forgot to shut it off at one point. And he thought he did, and then he switched over to Microsoft Outlook, and he's reading his email, and he's noting he's kind of like, as he normally does, grumbles and groans, like, maybe, and it was picking up and, like, writing garbage on the screen. And as he noticed, he's like, what the f-? And then, like, it wrote that on the screen. And he's like, oh, my God. And it wrote, oh, my God. And he, like, jumped out of his chair. The other thing, perhaps less arguably technology-oriented, but I would argue the other way. You guys ever eat combos?
Oh, yeah. breakfast.
For breakfast.
I was great with soy milk.
I was eating a bag of combos, and I was saying to myself, I was eating them, you know, combos are really good, but they're just not cheesy enough. They're not, like, there's not the burst of cheese that I
yes,
hope for.
I used to always buy them and then also buy the tub of cheddar cheese and get them in that.
But you know what's funny? I was eating the bag, and I'm thinking this. I'm like, you know, I wish there was a higher cheese to pretzel ratio. At the moment I thought that thought, like, crossed the synapses in my brain, I put my hand into the bag, and I pulled out a pretzel that was host to the largest cheese paste tumor I've ever seen in my life. I jumped back because
the combo stuffing machinery.
I felt it like squish in my thumb and forefinger, and I'm like, yeah. So I showed it to Mechno. You were a witness to this, weren't you?
I can attest to its validity. Yes.
So he insisted that I consume this cheese paste nugget, and I like kind of nibbled away at it until it was gone, and it was kind of a strange experience. But you know, be careful what you wish for, right?
You wasted the one wish you will ever get in your entire life.
Oh my goodness! So, our first story, very appropriate for our show, being that it's entitled "Little Brother." If you Reuters and other news agencies are. Since the last episode, have reported on Washington, D.C.'s plans to install an unprecedented network of surveillance cameras in public places. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but basically, they're going to set up surveillance cameras that are going to be monitoring not only, you know, the great monuments of Washington, D.C., but also shopping areas, streets, all over the place, basically.
So if you ever had a dream to pee on the Washington Monument, now is not the time.
Yeah. So the system's eventually going to include hundreds of cameras, and it's going to link to existing Metro system cameras that are being used for traffic surveillance already. I know that the head of the police department project that's creating this was quoted as saying, in the context of September 11th, we have... but no choice to accept greater use of this technology.
Isn't this part of the American way of life that President Bush is
supporting?
You have
a choice. You have a choice, and one of them is no.
That's right.
But don't people realize that?
Well,
you have your freedom as long as you stay in your own home.
Well, I don't know. That raises the question of how much right to anonymity do American people actually have?
I would have to... It's of my opinion. In my opinion, being of what society I want to live in, that it's one thing to go into an establishment of private property, such as a convenience store, where you have a choice not to patronize that business or some other freedom of choice involved. But this is a matter of going outside your house. Yeah, you can do what you want in your own bedroom.
Right, but you always take the chance that you're watched. If you leave your home, and possibly even in your home, unless you have heavy curtains.
Okay, but I mean, doesn't this smack of, you know, science fiction scenarios of decades past to anyone? Like, the things that, like, you know, horrified us as we read them in high school?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but if we always feel that we're watched, how can we possibly experience liberty? You'll end up in a 1984 scenario where you'll always be afraid of being arrested for some, you know.
They're already doing this in England, too. You go on every single street corner and there's a camera watching you.
I was going to get to England in a little bit, but you know what? I mean...
Jeez, if I knew that, I'd have given them something
to watch. On the other hand, every week I come in here and I hear another story about Australia this, Australia that, and it's some politician in Australia fighting for the... individual or consumer rights of its populace. And it's, you know, I joke about immigration, but I think as of this week, I don't know if I'm joking anymore. I don't know. It's kind of, this could be prophetic or premature, but, I'm hoping that in expressing this, I kind of create a self-denied prophecy. But I think individual rights in this country are on their deathbed.
Well, why don't you wish that they weren't on their deathbed and then see what happens.
And click my heels together.
But somebody might have. Last time you were delivered of a cheese tumor, so God knows what'll happen this time.
Somebody might catch on camera that I'm clicking those ruby heels together. You
get
and
a
then...
freedom tumor.
Yeah, that's right. Fongaboo is here in Beck t-shirt and ruby heels.
No, but I love how, you know, we're told, like, let's go about business as usual.
Let's go about business as usual, but everybody watch everybody else.
No, okay, business as usual was about the great unwatched, as far as I remember, but apparently business as usual only means continue with the consumer glut. You know?
Yeah, continue your shopping.
Yeah, continue the
shopping.
Appearance of normality.
Go to the malls.
And that's if we right. Don't, buy a new car.
We'll be checking on the tapes to make sure you were there.
Well, that'll... It's a different matter if they're archiving the footage mm-hmm. than if they're... doing real-time pattern matching.
Okay,
well,
but what
yes,
about
so that's,
these...
But that's more a matter of degree than anything else.
What about these past cases of the Super Bowl or even on the streets of Miami, from what I understand? They have similar... They're taking similar images and running them, scanning people's faces with facial recognition algorithms and then comparing them against, you know, wanted photos.
Now, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but whenever you go out in public, don't you sacrifice your anonymity at least a little bit anyhow? Because it doesn't have to be a system that recognizes you. A police officer could, or a friend. If you go to a restaurant with a prostitute, say, Fondaboo.
What are you looking at me for?
Ruby heels.
It could very well be the circumstance that I would recognize you rather than a camera stationed in the restaurant or outside the restaurant.
Well, yeah, with the technology in its current state, you probably would recognize him before the software would.
Yeah, but wouldn't you consider the actions of this software a little active? And I think, didn't you even mention when you weren't being devil's advocate that it could constitute a violation of the term of, you know,
Fourth
right
Amendment?
Not to be investigated when not under suspicion?
Unlawful search and seizure?
Sure. yeah, I did bring that point up, but at the same time, if a police officer looks at you, he has to decide whether or not you match the profile of a criminal or not. Did he do a search on you? Well, where does the line get drawn?
Mm-hmm. Okay, but a police officer can't scan hundreds of thousands of people in a stadium.
Well, he can.
If he's super
but it's not so much that he can't scan them, it's more a matter of does he remember all of the faces of the mugshots to match them with anything. But
the fact that we now have a centralized system in D.C. is going to set a precedent, I think.
Centralized citizen spying.
What you're really worried about is not the technology, but the abuse of such technology, which is almost absolutely corollary.
Well, it's almost like not even... When technology makes things magnitudes more easy...
Magnitudes more easy technology,
when it makes,
yes.
When it makes magnitudinous technology. Indeed.
I think it becomes easier. What was yesterday's act of abuse is a passive normality.
That's deep, yo.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, you know.
Continuing from the Orwell files or the, another reason to order tourism pamphlets from Australia for Fong. U.S. to weigh computer chip implant. This comes from the Associated Press this week. A Florida technology company is poised to ask the government for permission to market a first ever computer ID chip that could be embedded beneath a person's skin. For airports, nuclear power plants, and other high security facilities, the immediate benefits could be a closer to foolproof security system. But piracy advocates warn that the chip could lead to encroachments on civil liberties.
Really?
Well... The implant technology is another case of science fiction evolving into fact. See, I told you. No. Those who have long advanced the idea of implant chips say it could someday mean no more easy to counterfeit ID cards, nor dozing security guards. Just a computer chip about the size of a grain of rice that would be difficult to remove and tough to mimic. Other uses of the technology on the horizon, from an added device that would allow satellite tracking of an individual's every movement to the storage of sensitive data like medical records, are already attracting interest across the globe for tasks like foiling kidnappings or assisting paramedics. Applied Digital Solutions' new VeriChip is another sign that September 11th has catapulted the science of security into a realm with uncharted possibilities. And also new fears for privacy. Quote, the problem is that you always have to think about what the device will be used for tomorrow, unquote, said Lee Teen, a senior attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a privacy advocacy group. Quote, it's what we call function creep. At first, a device is used for applications we all agree are good, but then it's slowly used for more than it was intended, unquote.
Yeah, but you can't put something in somebody's body without their permission. I mean,
that's one of their arguments. It's clearly, it's completely mandatory.
But in our litigation happy country, they can't do that.
But I mean, how many other things, whether it be a social security card, driver's license, there are plenty of quote opt out, things that.
Well, that's true to one extent, but at the same time, they do not implant the social security card into your body. There's a huge difference there.
If you found that, you know, decades from now, you couldn't participate you couldn't qualify for whatever.
Education, school.
You couldn't,
I don't need no education. What you talking about?
You know, what if getting a phone bill or getting phone hookup or, electric service, it would be a big hassle if you were unimplanted.
Well, I'm used to, I'm used to doing things a little differently and having it be a big hassle.
As a male, I can think of an opt-in, some sort of opt-in, unmandatory participant.
As a male?
Yeah. How about circumcision?
Oh, yes, that's exactly what I was thinking about. They actually...
Nobody mandates that.
No, they don't, but it's quote-unquote normal procedure. But at the same time, what happened at one hospital... Well, that may or may not be true, but there was... I read a story on circumcision once, and there was one hospital where they had given a baby boy a circumcision after the parents had told them not to, and that hospital lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why I'm saying this sort of thing won't come to happen, because, nobody's going to want to stick their neck out and pay out the hundreds of thousands of dollars to people that don't want it.
You know something? I don't remember it, but I'm sure I miss my foreskin.
So, well, continuing on with the 1984 scenarios, it extends beyond our shores.
Yeah, you had heard about the what was going on over in Europe with the pay for driving scheme on the roads, where satellites will be tracking drivers. Let me see. Joanna Walters, transportation editor for The Observer, on Sunday, February 24th, noted that all cars will be fitted with a Big Brother satellite tracking meter to charge drivers up to 45p. That's 45 pence.
Oh.
45p a mile for every journey taken under radical plans to slash congestion in British roads. Well, what are taxes for, then? Do we not have to pay taxes if we have one of these in our car? Do we get it?
You could make that argument against tolls overall. But I don't know. The ookie part to me is the black box inside of everyone's car that...
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary to put a black box in their car to punish them for that. You know, you can certainly punish them for driving in much easier, low-technology ways.
Yeah, they already punish them. They pay a lot more for fuel in the first place.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they do. Doesn't stop them yet.
You know, I actually don't have a problem with any of these technologies as long as it's unilateral access. So if you decided you wanted to find out what your senator's been doing, you could just... like, put his name on on the search list.
Right, but
see.
I don't want my neighbors, just because they're nosy, being able to look up me.
Well, I think that kind of example, like, the lawmakers and people who are advocating for civil security to instill these, when you say, well, how about, what if your citizens decide they want to make sure that you're on the level and start tracking you, is that okay? And that's where their argument falls apart.
Yeah, and of course, their answer is no. But you can't make it totally unilateral because, like I said, I don't want people looking me up. There's enough of a lack of privacy already. With or without black boxes or security chips or any of that stuff.
On a different note,
there's a small little voice.
The devil is telling me something.
I'm hearing voices.
I noticed that. This is the official background music of Little Brother, is it not?
Yes, I think...
we're trying we're encrypting messages in the broadcast. whether it's, I don't know how new this is, but I don't know, have you guys heard about the digital transmission content protection, which is going to be implemented in all new HDTV sets?
Now that really has me up in arms.
DTCP was defined as a method to encrypt information being sent over IEEE 1394 transport to another device. That's FireWire for you common folk. This information can be audio or video or both. This encryption scheme has been adopted by major manufacturers and will become the standard by which FireWire connectivity is defined in the home theater. Basically, they're implementing this type of encryption in HDTV sets. But what the horrible part is that it's going to make any HDTV sets that have been sold that don't have a digital input obsolete, because they're not going to be able to receive, well, the scenario that's imagined, they're not going to be able to receive broadcasts that are going to be encrypted in the future.
Anything
after
that,
they,
anything that can be encrypted can be decrypted. Look at the whole thing about DVD, where the encrypted technology was cracked, and you can decrypt the technology.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but that's, the people that tend to be able to decrypt stuff aren't the kind of jamokes that run out and buy HDTVs the first run that they get.
Yeah. I mean, they basically alienated however many, you know, the
all
small
those,
subset of people.
All
that
those poor people that ran out there and bought it because it was the newest technology.
Paid $12,000 for an HDTV or like $50,000 for a plasma screen.
I want a plasma screen just to use as a computer monitor.
That
nice
would be
50-inch. Yes. I wouldn't even want to watch
TV. How would you
TV
feel if it. You bought it, but then you couldn't use it anymore because...
But I wouldn't want to use it for I wouldn't want to use it for TV.
You'd want to punch someone if that happened. Yeah. You'd want to walk right up to them and sock them in the nose.
And that's exactly what will happen in this scenario. All of the earliest HDTV buyers will walk right up to the company and sock everybody they find in the nose.
Okay, it's
those
just,
poor receptionists.
It's just about time for our first and only break. But before that, it's also the time where we tell you that this is WRPI Troy.
WRPI Troy.
This I do know. So stay tuned. There's more of Little Brother around the corner.
You certainly don't want to listen to anyone preach to you about quitting smoking. Nicotine in your blood. I'll just have this one, but I won't have any more. Nicotine overdose. How about doing something physical? Everyone will understand. Nicotine on your hands could get into your eyes and nose and could cause stinging, redness, or irritation problems. Hey, one's not gonna kill me. Senses of smell and taste may improve. Have a mint. Nicotine in your blood. Cope with temptations to smoke. You'll be able to enjoy life without relying on a cigarette. Hey, one's not gonna kill me.
Come on!
It's true. anxiety. This isn't the time for you to use the patch.
Hey, senor.
Yes?
That was some good break. Interstitial music you had there.
It's pretty nice. But now we're back here on Little Brother, and I am Fongaboo, and I'm here with Phil, Lil, Mekno, and Sean. And I would like to reiterate that we do have a website. It is www.radiocreator.com. And of course, if you'd like to send us an email, the email address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com.
But, what sort of ethnicity? I mean, you started out Spanish, but what ethnicity do you suppose you were ending on there?
I don't know.
Thank you, Apu.
Before we proceed, I must do After Dark. Let me tell you about the things going on. No, seriously.
Let me tell you about the things going on in the bathroom at the fuse box. No. Let me tell you. No, let me, really.
Double Impact presents Essence, House and Techno Music at Quintessence in Albany this Saturday. That would be today, tonight.
It's actually a good night.
They're having techno at Quintessence?
Yes, it happens every week.
Really?
You wouldn't know it, except for the cameras they have installed.
You can get teriyaki chicken also while you're dancing.
Yes. Or,
you can do it.
Or steak chicken pataki. They do have chicken pataki.
Paterki.
DJ Dames and Company will be spinning. Let's see, at Larkin Restaurant coming up, Larkin Restaurant in Albany, March 15th, met Marshall Crenshaw. At Northern Lights in Clifton Park on March 8th, Leif Garrett. Proctor's in Schenectady, March 13th, Three Irish Tenors. And at Valentine's in Albany, we have on March 10th, Agnostic Front, and March 19th, Wesley Willis.
Have you seen the ads for the new Three Irish Tenors?
No, but
album?
They should do a duet with Wesley Willis.
But it's all Americana. It's bizarre. It's the Three Irish Tenors sing American patriotic songs.
Can you repeat that Agnostic Front one?
It reminds me of the other day we were riding along, and what song was it? Some patriotic song. Was it God Bless America or something? And Celine Dion was singing it.
That's
very strange.
March 10th. So, let's see. Moving on.
One of the songs you play during the break, Mindless Self-Indulgence, is going to be there on the 9th, but it's like a secret show or something. Nobody knows about it.
Well, maybe it's too far ahead in the future.
Don't spread the news.
You know what I'm saying.
All right. Not really, but for the sake of argument, I will.
So, I came across this website. It was actually my roommate that found this.
And, Adult Baby?
No. No. Let's keep your browser history out of this. But the site's called counterevidence.com, which I just want to share because that's both my roommate and I, we find it somewhat dubious. And it's basically a site devoted to government's conspiracies, and it's a pay site. You pay some sort of monthly subscription, and then you get to see all sorts of footage of aliens and UFOs and faces on Mars and such, which, you know, I'm into. But the funny thing about this site, if you go to their About Us section, they have this bizarre origin that they describe. Supposedly, the organization behind the site is the Counter Evidence Research Consortium. And they go into this whole diatribe about this guy, Albert Stone. To quote from the site, on November 5th, 1959, scientist Albert Stone made history with his discovery of a new thermoplastic, which was much more durable than its relative, acrylic,
and was able to withstand temperatures in excess of 2,900 degrees Fahrenheit.
And was delicious.
No, that's shellac.
That reminds me of something, but go on.
Fashion tip. Thermilic is this year's silly putty. He called it Thermilic. Used primarily for military and space purposes, Thermilic is relatively unknown outside of scientific circles, and the United States government prohibits export of its chemistry beyond its borders. Despite the low profile of Stone's discovery, his patent on Thermilic made him a multimillionaire at the age of 44.
So he's a multimillionaire, but he charges you to look at his alien footage.
To this day, it remains one
and
of the...
And PBS doesn't.
To this day, it remains one of the few patents deemed classified by the United States Patent Office. Thermilic continues to be widely used in U.S. space programs, and sources confirm that it plays an integral part in the new International Space Station.
So that would explain why there is no Thermilic on file.
Of course. Well, that's why you'll never find another reference to it.
This part, yeah, intrigued my roommate, and he did every search, web search he could think of off the top of his head, and he found nothing on Albert Stone in reference to Thermilic. Continuing, although...
Did he find anything relating to Albert Stone and, fraud?
Fraud? I don't know. But basically, although continuing his scientific research throughout the years that followed, Stone indulged himself in a pursuit of study that few of his colleagues or friends ever knew of, the search for proof of extraterrestrial life on Earth. Financially independent, Stone traveled the Earth in search of proof of visitors from other planets. Yada, yada, yada.
I believe Albert Stone is the proof of life on other planets.
He dreamt of an organization that could operate under the radar of nations that were continually attempting to thwart his efforts and confiscate materials.
That's right. When you want to operate under the radar, you put up a website.
Countries such as the United States, who operated just such an organization, yet whose goal was to eradicate the materials. In other words, hide the truth. Okay, so this kind of made...
It's kind of like cheesy X-Files kind of...
This kind of made my roommate, who had already plunked down, I think, $10 for a month or 3 month subscription, something like that, a little suspicious. So, he did the searches, and then he wrote them, and he said, I've read this whole description about Albert Stone and Thermilic, and I demand that you give... I've found nothing. I demand that you provide me some evidence. And some further history on this. So they simply wrote him back and said, "We cannot substantiate what you have asked for. Your credit card has been credited." That's about it, as I recall.
Fraud. Aww.
So does this give rise? I don't know. I mean, this is completely supposition because we don't know what the deal with these guys are. But. I wonder, does this give rise to a new phenomenon, and that would be conspiracies for entertainment purposes only?
Oh, conspiracies have been entertainment purposes for a long time. Long time.
Come on, this is...
What this reminds me of, though? What is it, Thermilic? If, I don't know if anybody here ever goes on cruel.com besides Phil and I, but the other day they had a link to a site about cheese racing. And what this is that you take a slice of a Kraft single, and you throw it on the grill. That's right, the grill. And you would think that the plastic would melt and cause all these fumes and ooky cheesy mess, but what it actually does is that the plastic remains intact and the cheese melts and even boils so that the whole packet of cheese inflates. And I think maybe those packets are evidence that backs up Albert Stone's case for Thermilic.
Where does the race come in?
So if you want to see, several people will throw slices of cheese on the grill at the same time, and whichever one inflates to the point where all four corners lift up off the grill first is the winner.
I win!
And there are many rules. There's official cheese racing rules. You can link to it through cruel.com.
Undoubtedly, there is a drinking game around cheese racing.
Yes, they do say that the consumption of alcohol is almost mandatory.
I was going to say that maybe
racing. There's
a drinking game around Thermilic, but maybe there was a drinking game that came to the that caused the invention.
So you should let your roommate know about cheese racing as evidence for Albert Stone's case and his patent.
But as far as, on the other hand, evidence of fraud, this is why I bring it up on a show as Little Brother. Continuing on, anybody with half an idea of how the web and domains work. Well, Bat and I in this one, they're talking about how their site was founded, and then they follow it up with, on the first Monday of the second week of operation, emails started coming to our customer service department, almost all of which stated that more and more people attempting to connect were receiving the error message, website not found. But Wednesday of the same week, employees and website administrators were unable to connect to counterevidence.com, even though the website servers were in the same building.
Great Scott!
CERC management called in their lead programmers for an emergency meeting. The explanation of the situation was plain and simple. Said one programmer, quote, "We have been deleted from the domain registry. Any calls to that domain have been terminated, and any requests we have made... Any calls to the domain counterevidence.com simply fails, and it no longer exists." And even worse news followed. "Even our IP addresses have been terminated, and any request we have made for an explanation or even replacement IPs from our telecom has been met with silence." It seemed that Albert Stone's dream would have gone forever. It would be gone forever if not for two of CERC's finest engineers who had a plan. While we cannot divulge here how we've been able to bring counterevidence.com back online, another ISP, we can tell you that it has taken our engineers and programmers nearly 9 months to create the network infrastructure, recover the hard drive, and the only working copy of the website to make it happen. So
I would say, though, that Albert Stone's dream has lived on. His dream of separating $10 bills from many an internet consumer has lived on despite the government's oppression.
So then our curiosity didn't stop there. We did a who is on the domain and found some contact address and phone number located in Washington, D.C. And here's what we found when we gave a call over to the number there. I don't know. It's just a little odd in my opinion.
Why, that is odd.
"Hello, and welcome to the website division of the Counter Evidence Research Consortium. If you are calling regarding your subscription to counterevidence.com, please contact our customer service department using the secure help page on our website or email us directly at cs@counterevidence.com. You are calling from a non-secure line and cannot be connected directly to our offices. Please leave a message after the tone or call back using a secure phone line. Thanks and have a great day."
Ah, secure phone line. Ah.
But if that's just a pre-recorded message, how do they know if your line is secure or not? Maybe it's the president calling the counter evidence guy.
Hmm. So we don't have much time left, so I want to get in one other thing at the least. It was a big week for file sharing and the politics of which. First up, the RIAA, which I think is what the Recording Industry Association of America, they did a poll, from what I understand, that shows that they're almost back down to pre-Napster revenues. Third time, this comes from Slashdot, by the way. Third time's the charm. Napster came out in 1999, and the Recording Industry Association of America had two great revenue statements for that year and the next. But now that CD sales finally are down year to year, at long last they get the chance to blame Napster for their woes. There's just one thing wrong. They don't have Napster to kick around anymore. For yesterday's press release, the RIAA commissioned a survey by a research firm to prove that music downloading is to blame. But all they tell us about the survey is that, quote, 23% of surveyed music consumers say they are not buying more music because they are downloading or copying for free. No more details provided, no link to the survey's raw numbers. So what does that mean? I guess 77% are buying more music because they're downloading it for free. So, also in this Slashdot article, I want to point out that the writer of this article, or rather this is a quote from another article by someone named Robert Heinlein. But
really?
Huh.
Yeah.
I'll be danged.
Author of Stranger in a Strange Land.
He's
a Puppet Masters.
Have Lummox Will Travel.
Hmm.
And countless mm-hmm. others. No, wait, have space. To have spacesuit will travel.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm mixing up. I'm mixing up stories completely.
Kurt Vonnegut invented Thurman.
Kurt Vonnegut set up security. No. but continuing on in the file sharing world, music site Morpheus locked out users. Streamcast Network's Morpheus, a file swapping service that many have said would be impossible for courts to shut down, shut out most of its users Tuesday, citing technical problems. Computer users trying to log on to the service were greeted with a message telling them to upgrade their software to connect, although no newer version of the software was available. The outage immediately sparked a huge increase in traffic on alternative file swapping services, such as Nutella. So, I don't know, this kind of is a little faux pas, because if everyone is able to get shut out of the service, this kind of contradicts their argument that, because it was, completely peer-to-peer, it could not be shut down.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Better watch what you do.
See, my main problem with these is when they have these surveys about, do you feel like you're downloading more music and consequentially buying less, really, like, it's either that people are stealing it or artists are being fed up with the corporate music infrastructure and are actually distributing a lot of their music for free that way. You know, it really doesn't, it's bad data.
Oh, it's a sign that the economic model is changing, and if I could find this article that I was thought I was referring to.
Well, there's three kinds of lies. There's one little lies, big lies, and statistics.
And one's by Robert Heinlein.
Robert Heinlein in the studio, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wait, maybe it was...
Do you like blue or file sharing?
Oh, no, it was a quote by Robert Heinlein. I'm sorry.
Wow.
There's grown up in the minds of certain groups in this country the notion that because a man or corporation has made a profit out of the public for a number of years, the government and courts are charged with the duty of guaranteeing such a profit in the future, even in the face of changing circumstances and contrary to public interest. This strange doctrine is not supported by statute or common law. Neither individuals nor corporations have any right to come into court and ask that the clock of history be stopped or turned back, which kind of echoes a point that I've been making all along, you know, granted not in a broadcast venue. But that's, you almost want to compare this situation to the phenomena of factories being closed down by multinational corporations that, and they're citing that, you know, they have a duty to their stockholders, and that's the number one priority. And therefore, they can hire cheaper labor in other countries. So too bad, so sad, that's the way it goes. So why is economics only one way? You know, when I as a consumer no longer need your CDs because technology has nullified it, like, why are you going to ram it down everybody's throats? If music is naturally becoming free as a result of the logistics of technology, guess what? You've got a new economic model that's going to come whether you like it or not, and you better deal with it and find a way to make a decent amount of money under those conditions. You got to be dynamic and change with the times.
Absolutely. Start promoting concerts, start maybe franchising the band merchandise, something like that, but can't really... They're very resistant.
When pay TV takes over...
But yeah, I mean, just because there is a new infrastructure coming in, you can't expect them not to fight against it.
Yeah,
I mean, nothing dies without, you know, some fight.
Mm.
It's just natural.
Except for factory jobs.
Look at Gary Busey.
Oh, you don't think anybody fought for the factory jobs?
Know,
come on.
I know. Okay, also this week, in lawyers for the makers of file sharing applications, Morpheus and Grokster, say that if their clients can be held responsible for illegal copies of music and motion pictures, then so too should companies such as Microsoft and AOL Time Warner, whose software and internet connectivity are essential to building networks of file traders. Monday, in a final written argument in advance of federal court hearing next month, lawyers marshaled by the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the San Francisco law firm of Kieger and Van Ness defended their bid to bring a quick end to the pair of lawsuits that pit the motion picture industry, record companies, and major music publishers against creators of fast-track-based peer-to-peer file-sharing software. Unlike users of the former Napster network for exchanging MP3 audio files, users of Morpheus, Grokster, and Kazaa software can exchange any computer file they agree to share. But if the EFF lawyers said that the software doesn't work without multimedia-capable computers, without internet access provided by companies such as AOL, Time Warner's America Online, or without software to play the music and video and sometimes copy it to optical discs, if the makers of the file-sharing software are breaking the law, the EFF lawyer said in one of two filings Monday, then, quote, co-conspirators include some of the same multinational corporations whose record companies and motion picture studios are joined in the lawsuits.
WRPI, Troy.
What do you guys make of this? It's a lot of funny logic in all of this, you know?
Well,
the times are a-changing.
Not to sound non-nationalistic, but it's not exactly new, is it? I mean, corporations trying to swing things around to their own benefit. Well, it's a little depressing, but not exactly shocking, if you know what I'm saying.
So I don't know. Do you think that these other companies should be held liable?
Of course not. But neither should I don't know. Neither should Napster have been held liable either.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I think that Napster, it was a complete and total travesty of justice that Napster got shut down because they weren't actually sharing anything.
Nope.
If you're going to shut down Napster, you have to shut down every web server because it has the potential of sharing copyrighted files, just as Napster did.
Yeah, and just about everything has a potential of sharing copyrighted files.
Copyrighted files have been shared since before the internet. Bulletin board services have always had hacker sites and hidden areas where copyrighted files could be found by the right people. So what's the difference?
Do you think that publishers had the same spastic reactions when photocopiers first came out?
I don't know.
They did when the Betamax did.
I know there was some issues, like, for example, if you want to take part in certain music competitions, you had to have original music. You can't have photocopied it, your sheet music, when you used it.
Wow.
But that's about the only example of that I've seen. But yep. I remember our band instructor telling us to just darken in the faded photocopies. And that's what we did. Wow, so, low budget schools.
That's about all the time we have this week on Little Brother. Stay tuned for the RPI Engineers, RPI Hockey coming up. This has been Little Brother for this week, and we'll...
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
And the Little Brother without Little
say goodbye.
Brother. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody in Radio Land.
And we'll see you next week.